Peter Easton was seated at Colonel Leeds's desk, papers spread in front of him. He had changed into the one suit that he had brought with him from the wrecked carriage. Carl Holtz was seated at a small table across the room. He was working on a small notepad.
Though I don't want to be here, might as well make the best of it. The sooner we get done, the sooner we can leave. Seems to me that we need to approach this problem on two fronts. One is talking with our men.
Well, he seems cooperative enough.
Yeah, so he does. He's a credit to the Army. If he continues his good work, I'll be sure to recommend him for promotion. Then there are others. This Captain Josiah Finch of the Texas Rangers. Not only have complaints been filed against him, but he admits his deeds. He has never even tried to deny them.
Well, I've asked around a little. The locals have great respect for him.
Yes, but little respect for the southern border. We will need to enlist his cooperation.
He's out on a case now. Leeds has assured me that Finch will talk to us as soon as he returns.
The second front is to appease our southern neighbors. Apparently, Raul Delgado is the man in charge of the Mexican territory just south of here. We need to set up a meeting with him. Let him have his say, make his complaints. Maybe it will quiet him down.
I'll get the telegram out immediately, along with the one to Washington.
Yes, by all means, let them know we're on the job. See if you can arrange to have them send us some operating funds in that next gold shipment. While you're at it, see if you can arrange for some additional clothing. I'm afraid these could get stale quite fast. We can't have representatives of our federal government smelling like goats.
Holtz jotted a few more lines on his pad, then stood and walked over to the desk.
Nothing wrong with your plan of action, Peter, but I have to question, how serious are we about this?
Yes, I know what you're saying. I was sent to this forsaken land because I sniffed around in the wrong place. I doubt if anybody seriously expects us to solve the problem.
Which is perhaps all the more reason to try and solve it. We've accomplished nothing so far but to lose our funds and our clothes. If we don't do something positive, we'll be the butt of jokes when we return home. We can kiss any further advancement goodbye.
Unfortunately, you are right. It's a confounded nuisance, but we will need to be firm. That means Leeds may have to enforce orders not to his liking. Can we issue orders to the Army?
Well, the Army answers to the Department, and we represent the Department. I'd say yes. He'd have to do as we ask, whether he likes it or not.
How about the Rangers?
They are under state jurisdiction, but I imagine they'll do as the Army asks.
And what might the Army ask of the Rangers?
The voice came from just inside the doorway. Finch was carrying a big gun on his hip, and his eyes shot fire. Beside him were Leeds and Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves, the men that had rescued them the day before.
We are interested in keeping international peace. We may look to the Army to help enforce national and international law. What form that may take remains to be developed. That would obviously take precedence over state law or personal preference.
Hogwash!
Leeds stepped forward.
Gentlemen, this is Captain Josiah Finch of the Texas Rangers. Josiah, this is Peter Easton and his assistant, Carl Holtz.
Bureaucrats.
Public servants.
Meddlers.
So much for getting off on the right foot.
Josiah always did have a talent for diplomacy.
Easton stood and walked around the desk. He stretched out his hand agreeably.
Let's not fight until we hear each other out. We are on the same side, after all.
Finch looked at the hand for long seconds, but finally stretched out his own hand. Easton then went around the room, shaking hands as if he were a politician running for office.
There, that's better. How does everybody feel about breakfast? Let's have a bite and then discuss business. Carl has some telegrams to send, then he will join us.
You may not like what I have to say.
And you may not like what we have to say, but we are all reasonable men. We can work out the differences.
True to his word, Leeds put Tom, Ben, and Fisk in quarters that were worse than the cell occupied by Mel Murdoch. The three outlaws were imprisoned in the building that had been the temporary jail while the permanent cells were being built. It was tiny, cramped, and dirty.
I never should have gotten involved with you clowns. I would have been better off had I just walked away.
You were the one that talked us into the scheme. Our mistake was trusting you. You sure showed your true colors. Of a skunk!
Why, you sorry sack of...
Fisk leaped off his bunk and rushed toward Ben. Tom stood between them and separated them with his good arm.
We've all messed up.
I've been in too many jail cells in my time. I hate it here more than you two could possibly imagine. Instead of fighting each other, let's figure a way to get out.
Fisk sat back down on his bunk.
Get out? Sure. And then what? Those rangers would be on our asses before we could even clear the city limits. What a brilliant idea.
I overheard them talking. They got Mel Murdoch, one of the Dingo Whaley gang, in custody. They got him in a nice setup while we're here in this flea-infested dump. And you know why? Because they want Whaley and Murdoch in cahoots with them. That's why.
What's that got to do with us?
It could have a lot to do with us if we could get out of here, Tom. We've all heard of Dingo Whaley. He's a mean SOB, sure, but he knows how to get the job done. If we could hook up with him, we wouldn't have to worry about no second-rate heists. We'd be going first class.
Right. He'd look at the great way we handle this robbery and take us in right away.
He would if we had something to trade. We let him know about Murdoch. That would help him. Then he might help us.
You're crazy. We'll never get out of here. And even if we do, Dingo Whaley wouldn't look at either of you twice.
So what would you do if you could get out of here?
I'd kill that son of a bitch, Sam Two Wolves. My damned arm is still numb from where he shot the gun from my hand.
Now who's dreaming? You wouldn't last 10 seconds in a fight with him. He's a regular gunslinger, just like his partner, Bodine. Look at what he did to me. He could have killed me easy. You wouldn't have a chance.
It was a lucky shot that got me.
And you'll be 6 feet under while we're enjoying the good life with Whaley's gang.
Hell, even if you got out, you wouldn't know where to find that bunch. If the Rangers can't catch up to them, what makes you think you could?
We'd find them.
Oh, just leave me alone. I need a drink.
Dingo Whaley sat on his horse at the side of the road, hidden by some brush. His men were positioned up and down the road. They were waiting for the stagecoach to pass. This was not one of the more popular routes, but it would have some mail and a few passengers, would give his men some more spending money, and it would be easier than hunting buffalo. Whaley had to smile. The meeting with the Mexican official had gone better than he had hoped. Not only had Delgado agreed to not interfere with Whaley's operations, he would also provide information to help plan some big jobs. The idea of going after the gold shipment made his mouth water. Even without Delgado's share, it would make Whaley and his men rich. The outlaw leader's thoughts were interrupted by the sound of a rushing stagecoach coming down the road. He saw the dust before he saw the horses and coach.
Here it comes, boys. Get ready.
The outlaws put on their masks. The stagecoach rounded the bend. Pierce, situated to get a good view of the road, took careful aim and followed the bouncing driver. He shot once, and the driver slumped over, lifeless. The shotgun rider tried to determine where the shot had been fired from. Moments later, the guard fell to the ground, rolled several times, and finally lay motionless. Two of Whaley's men rode into view, masks covering their faces, and grabbed the horses. A third man jumped into the driver's seat, took hold of the reins, and brought the coach to a stop. Whaley and the others then galloped into the open. One man threw down the trunk containing the mail and broke it open. Jessup opened the door.
You dang fools, get out of there! Now!
This time, there were only a man and a woman. The man was dressed in an Eastern suit. He reached into his belt and tried to pull a small gun. The outlaws opened fire, and the man fell to the ground. Blood spurted from a dozen wounds, staining the dry ground. The woman ran at Whaley. He was amused until her fingernails cut a gash in his cheek. He slapped her to the ground, almost knocking her unconscious. He pulled her to the side of the road behind some brush and pulled down his mask. When he was through, even the other outlaws didn't want anything further to do with her.
Well, what are you waiting around for? Let's ride.
Minutes later, the outlaws were back on their horses and on their way back to Mexico, confident there were no witnesses. The shotgun rider, however, had not been killed. The bullet had grazed him as the rocking coach tossed him from his seat. He landed hard and was knocked unconscious. He woke in time to see the group, led by Dingo Whaley, ride south toward the Mexican border. He recognized Whaley from seeing him around various saloons along the stage line. He watched for long minutes to make sure they would not circle around. He decided that they were headed for Mexico. The guard painfully sat up and rubbed his bloody head. He already felt the throbbing. It would get worse before he got better, but at least he was alive. He hobbled slowly along the road and found the dead male passenger. He had so many bullet holes that his body was already drained of blood. He looked a little further and found the female passenger, her body beaten beyond recognition. He climbed up to the seat and found the driver slumped over, his chest blown open by a large caliber gun. He worked as quickly as he could, handicapped by the pain in his head and the hot sun, pulling the bodies to the side of the road. Burial would have to come later. Now, it was important to get word to the authorities about the robbery. He climbed back up to the driver's seat.
Come on now, boys, let's get...
Took reins in hand and raced down the road. It would be miles before the next telegraph. It didn't surprise Matt and Sam that Lead suggested Rosie's place for breakfast. It was a good meal of bacon, eggs, hotcakes, and lots of coffee. Matt and Sam each ate 3 helpings. Mary was again the waitress, providing special attention to Sam.
Our compliments to the chef, Mary.
Well, thanks. I'll be sure and tell him.
As breakfast concluded, Finch turned to the portly businessman.
Now, Easton, what is it you have to say to me? You bought breakfast, so I'll give you the courtesy of listening.
As per the earlier discussion, it's a question of boundaries. We have gotten a lot of complaints about illegal excursions into Mexico. And, Captain Finch, your name has been associated with many of those incidents.
That's so.
It's all in the reports.
Also in the reports are details about how Finch and his rangers have brought many desperados to justice and brought at least a temporary peace to many of the outlying settlements. I know because I wrote those reports.
Nobody doubts the achievements of the captain and his men. I saw firsthand their courage and skill when Matt and Sam came to our aid yesterday.
And we weren't even rangers then.
The matter at hand is how to keep peace with our southern neighbor.
Let me tell you something, Mr. Easton. You clowns in Washington can make all the rules you want, but out there in the sagebrush, those rules don't apply. Boundaries aren't lines on the ground, and nobody really knows where one country starts and the other stops. And then there are the corrupt officials who don't care who hides out down there. In fact, some of them encourage it, enjoying the damage the outlaws and bandits do to the Americans. When a lawbreaker heads south, I'm going after him, come hell or high water. You get it?
I'm sorry, Captain, but that can no longer be allowed. You are hereby ordered to remain on the United States side of the river.
I'd like to see you try and stop me. I'll run over any man that tries to stop me.
Holtz hurried into the cantina, several slips of paper in his hand. He immediately noticed the tension at the table.
Sorry I'm late, but I see that you've already started discussing the business at hand. I have some telegrams here that might be pertinent, Mr. Easton.
Let's hear them.
Raul Delgado is not only interested in meeting with us, he and a delegation will be arriving tomorrow to discuss the situation.
Fast work. That rascal has never been interested in talking with us before.
Holtz looked at the second telegram.
The department has approved a reduced amount for expenses. Well, that's not of immediate interest to the Army or Rangers, is it?
What about the third message? Well, let's hear it.
It's news of a stage robbery. Apparently, the Dingo Whaley gang is at work again.
Matt reached out and plucked the paper from his hand and read it through.
Apparently, the gang killed 2 passengers, a man and a woman. And damned if they didn't head to Mexico.
The table was quiet for several minutes as the men thought about the latest news concerning the Whaley gang.
Now you know why I've been after them. They've had quite a fling all across Texas, but now they're getting even bolder. It's more important than ever to stop them.
So they were headed to Mexico. Is that something new?
It is for the Whaley bunch. Before, they split their time between legal or semi-legal activities and their criminal activities. They moved across the state in no set pattern, which is one reason they've been difficult to locate. It seems that they've now decided to set up a base of operations down south.
We should be able to find them easier.
Except that it is in Mexico. You can legally arrest them only on this side of the border, unless you go through the necessary paperwork as required by the Mexican government.
Don't you ever get tired of talking? Sam and I could take care of this situation real easy. We could just go down there and bring him back, feet first if necessary.
There is no doubt that you or any of the Rangers could take care of the situation, but it is important to first go through all the proper channels.
Important for your career?
Important for all of us. If we can keep the foreign government happy, our superiors will be happy. If you can bring in the criminals without violating law in return, your records will also be that much more distinguished. As I said, solving this problem appropriately is important for all of us. My heart goes out to those poor souls killed by the Whaley gang, but it does not change the basic situation.
Finch shook his head in frustration. Easton moved the telegrams in patterns on the table in front of him.
The commander of the Mexican forces in the area just south of the border has agreed to meet with us. And that is a positive development. That shows they are willing to work with us.
Leeds picked up the telegram from Delgado.
Not necessarily. I'm quite familiar with Raul Delgado. Rumor has it that his men have operated on our side of the river a time or two, though we've never had enough evidence to file formal complaints.
That has never come to our attention.
That is all in my reports as well. Now, somebody didn't do enough research before starting down here. Well, that's not my problem. Check with Washington if you don't believe me.
What are you trying to say?
What I'm saying is don't trust this man too far. Wouldn't put anything past him. If he's willing to talk, that means he's got something up his sleeve. Don't hope for much cooperation from him.
I understand your concern, Colonel. And Captain Finch, I also understand your feelings. But I must again ask all of you to not take any rash actions until we can meet with Delgado.
And in the meantime, how many more people are going to get killed by the Whaley gang?
Don't forget, Carl and I were victims as well. We have a personal stake in seeing Whaley brought to justice. At the same time, we cannot lose sight of the bigger picture.
We cannot lose sight of the fact that people are getting killed.
And perhaps through the meeting we can reach an understanding that will solve the problems for everybody.
Fat chance.
Easton stood and touched Holtz lightly on the shoulder.
Please excuse us, gentlemen. We need to prepare for the meeting with Delgado.
Yeah. Get out of here before I lose my temper.
Easton touched the brim of his hat. Holtz followed them out of the saloon. Delgado sat at his desk, the telegram from the American official in front of him, along with the official papers that Whaley had given him earlier. Most of Delgado's reports were not in writing. He preferred it that way. Many of his operations were not entirely legal, and he liked to keep his plans to himself as much as possible. The fewer people that knew about what was going on, the better he could control them. For a long time, Delgado had itched to get his hands on some American gold, though up to now, he had not seen how that could be arranged. He had crossed the border as many times as the Americans had, though he complained louder and longer than the Americans had to draw attention away from himself. Minor transgressions, however, were much different than committing a major crime, such as robbing a large gold shipment. Even so, Delgado had spies planted everywhere across southern Texas on both sides of the border. He routinely heard the rumors, reports, and hard information about stage schedules, shipping plans, civilian and military operations. He was continually making, changing, and abandoning plans as the situations changed. All this was with the tacit approval of his superiors in Mexico City, where the political situation was so unstable that nobody paid much attention to a single commander in a rural outpost. As long as he didn't rock the boat, they left him alone. Dingo Whaley's proposition was a stroke of luck. It was nothing new for outlaws to operate out of Mexico. Sometimes he let them work without interference. Sometimes he cooperated with American authorities, depending on what he needed at any given time. The fact that Whaley had the balls to actually try to ally himself with Delgado earned his respect. The Whaley gang also probably had the balls to actually carry off a gold theft without casting any suspicion on Delgado. The Mexican official reviewed in his mind the information he had been gathering about the gold shipment so that he could share it with Whaley. That was still several days away, which would give him time to meet with the Americans and to help Whaley draw up his plans. And to make matters even better, the Americans wanted to set up a meeting with him to discuss the border crossing question. He would be more than willing to talk with them. for all the good it would do them, they would also be playing into his hands.
Just calm down, Josiah. I saw the way you wanted to thrash Holtz. That wouldn't solve anything.
I know, but it sure would be fun.
What's important now is to find a way to get the Whaley gang without crossing the border if we can.
You're a fast learner, Sam. We started the plan on the trail, making Fisk and his bunch think that we let slip information that could be valuable to Whaley. Sam, I want you to talk with one of those yahoos in private. Act like you're trying to make a deal with him, like we have presumably done with Murdoch. That should clinch the idea in their minds. We also need to make sure that they know the Whaley gang is down in Mexico, so that they'll be pointed in the right direction when they escape from our custody. Once word gets out through the outlaw's grapevine that they have information for Whaley, he'll find them.
With Sam's gift to gab, that should be easy.
No problem.
I can almost guarantee that Whaley will try to kill Murdoch for squealing on him. That will bring him to us. I don't like having to wait for him to show up, but I think it's a safe bet that he will show.
What do you want me to do?
I want one of us guarding Murdoch when the time comes. There's also a question of the gold coming in, which I promised the colonel to help guard. You can help me work out those arrangements. I want to go over his town in detail. I want to arrange things so that during the escape, nobody gets hurt. I want to be ready for the planned attack on Murdoch. I want to safeguard the gold.
I appreciate the efforts of you and the boys.
It'll be our pleasure.
Holtz and Easton walked slowly back to the colonel's office. The sun was hot and sweat was already soaking their suits.
I think we're fighting a losing battle. And to be honest, I'm wondering if it's a fight we should lose.
Are you serious, Peter? We can't fail, especially you, since you're already in the doghouse.
Oh, I'm having second thoughts about this whole mission. These are all good men, doing their jobs the best way they know how. They're just trying to stop the robberies and killings. Maybe that's more important than a single man's career.
Speak for yourself. Maybe your career isn't that important, but mine is. I've gambled everything on coming here with you. I don't intend to fail.
And we won't fail. The meeting with Delgado might prove beneficial. Leeds, though reluctant, has agreed to help enforce the dictates against crossing the border. We'll just do the best we can, make a report and recommendations that will probably be buried and forgotten in a matter of weeks in any case, and get back home.
I still have to question how serious you are about this mission.
Question all you want. I'm still in charge, and I'll call the shots. So for now, I want you to start making arrangements for Delgado's visit. You know the routine. Make him feel like somebody important, since we want his cooperation. Arrange some kind of dinner or something.
In this town?
Talk to Leeds. I imagine Rosie can come up with something. Leeds will have some kind of facility where we can have more formal surroundings. Stop griping and make it work.
Hey, Tom, you've got company.
Tom scratched some bites that he had received during the night from the little creatures in his bunk. Through all his other jail terms, he never got used to it.
Yeah, who is it? Unless you got a plan to get me out of here, I'm not interested.
Maybe we should talk before you jump to conclusions.
I'm especially not interested in talking with you. Just leave me alone.
Sam motioned to the corporal, who opened the door, and grabbed Tom by the arm, lifting him off the bunk.
Easy, soldier. Can't you see the shoulder is bandaged?
Tom shook off the hand and stood on his own. He walked in front of the corporal into an adjoining room. The old adobe building had been almost abandoned and was used mainly for storage. An old desk was still in the room, piled high with trash. Sam pushed the trash off the desk and sat on a box. He left the door open a crack so they could be overheard by the other two still in the cell.
Have a seat. Let's chat for a little while.
We have nothing to talk about. I messed up again. I did the crime. With my record, I know they'll send me to the pen again. You can't threaten me with anything I don't already know about.
Sam leaned back in his chair and put his feet on his desk.
I'm not here to threaten you. What I have to say might help you.
Oh, you're a lawman. I haven't seen a lawman yet that's willing to help me.
I'm offering you a chance to work with us. If you cooperate, it'll go easier on you. Take a look at Murdoch. He's cooperating with us. And look how it's working out for him. He's not in a cramped cell with two other men. Do you think he's getting the same kind of slop to eat as you are? Do you think he'll be hanged as you should be?
So is Squealong's gang. Whaley won't stand for it. He'll be dead even if he doesn't hang.
The Whaley gang is now in Mexico. They have no idea that Murdoch is cooperating. There's no way they could know. They won't know until it's too late. Murdoch doesn't have anything to fear, and we'll get Whaley eventually. At that time, Whaley will be behind bars or hanged, while Murdoch will probably be done with whatever time he has to serve. You could get the same deal. He didn't plan the bank robbery. Just be willing to testify against Fisk, and we'll make it easier on you.
I've done lots of things wrong in my life, but I never squealed.
Think about it. You may never get another chance.
The corporal led Tom back to his cell. Fisk noted that as the door slammed, dust rose in puffs from the bars on the window. The soldier went back to the adjoining room, leaving the prisoners to themselves.
He wanted me to squeal on you, but I wasn't interested.
The SOB. The fool left the door open and we heard it all. I'm gonna kill that two wolves. It's not bad enough that he shoots me. He's trying to place all the guilt on me. Good thing that you didn't cooperate, else I'd have to kill you too.
Give it a rest. Two wolves said lots more that's even more interesting. Did you hear that talk about Murdoch? How he's turned on Whaley? Like we were talking earlier, that is something we could use. If we could get out of here and get word to Whaley. I guess that's just so much crap. We'll never get out of here.
Fisk paced back and forth, pounding his fist on the wall. Each time his fist hit, another cloud of dust spurted out of the old adobe wall.
Wait a minute. Maybe there is a way after all. This old building's about to fall apart.
He poked around the bars on the windows.
Take a look at this. With some luck, maybe we'll be out of here.
Then we can be on our way to Mexico. If we can get in good with Whaley, we'll have it made.
We'll head for Mexico, all right. After I kill Sam Two Wolves.
As he walked down the main street of San Angelo, Sam wondered if Fisk and the others would take the bait about Murdoch. Wouldn't they be suspicious that Sam had revealed so much about Whaley's gang, especially when they found that the old adobe had started to deteriorate? Sam would not have fallen for the trick, but Josiah figured they would, and he was a good judge of men and the criminal mind. In any case, Sam had done his job. The trap was baited. Matt and Josiah would set it. Then it would be a matter of patience to see if the prey would fall for the trap. Sam approached Rosie's cantina. Curious, he looked inside, but Mary was not there. Though the others kicked him about Mary's interest in him, Sam really thought she was a sweet girl. He didn't like to wear his heart on his sleeve and preferred that not even Matt know too much about his romantic interests, though there was no malice involved. Sam had to admit that he was just a little disappointed that Mary was not there, since he would have liked to talk with her a little, away from the crowd. He turned around to walk toward the colonel's office when a familiar figure raced around the corner and ran into him.
Oh!
Mary's face at first was flustered as a basket of fruit in her arms bounced into the air. Sam caught it before any of its contents could hit the ground. Mary's face brightened with a grin when she recognized Sam as the man standing above her.
Sam, I'm sorry to run into you. I should have watched where I was going.
My pleasure, Mary.
He held the basket in one hand and reached out to her with the other.
May I help you up?
Mary had long, dark hair and smooth skin that contrasted with the low-cut white blouse she was wearing. Her long, colorful skirt was tangled around her ankles. She reached up to Sam, who enjoyed the view that his angle provided. Her hand lingered on his a little longer than might have been expected. She smiled as she unselfconsciously rearranged her blouse and skirt.
Thank you, Sam.
I was hoping to see you. I looked in at Rosie's, but you weren't there.
Really? I couldn't have told it by the cool way you've been treating me at Rosie's. I figured I just wasn't good enough for you.
Yes, I'm just naturally shy. Not like Matt.
I can't imagine either of you being shy about anything. The way you came to our aid at the cantina when those hooligans tried to mess with us. Oh, you were wonderful.
Why the hurry? What's with the basket of fruit? Rosie seems more like a frijoles and tortilla place.
It's for the dinner. Surely you know about it. There's an important official from Mexico going to meet with Colonel Leeds and those two federal officers.
Important official? You must mean Delgado. I'd probably call him a two-bit crook, but I'm not a diplomat.
Yes, Raul Delgado. Colonel Leeds will conduct a dinner for him. Rosie will take care of the arrangements, and I'm helping Rosie. The colonel has a dining room he uses for such occasions. That's where I'm headed now. Would you join me?
If I could have a favor.
Name it.
Allow me to assist you with your load.
The two walked in the sunshine. Sam carried the basket easily in his left arm. His right hand put itself around Mary's slim shoulder, and she did not push it away.
No, Sam. You are not shy. Not shy at all.
Do you object?
Of course not. I meet lots of men in my job at Rosie's, but few of them hold any interest for me. They tend to be loud and crude cowboys, soldiers, buffalo hunters. Some of them are quite wealthy. Some are handsome. Few are even nice. But I don't want to go away with them, not even for a night.
So why'd you single me out?
There's something about you that's different. Something that sets you apart from other men. You interested me. But I suppose to you I'm just another saloon girl.
Sam winced, remembering the words he had used when he first met Mary.
I apologize for being so harsh. It was thoughtless of me.
Mary looked at him through half-closed eyes.
I'm not mad about it. What you said is true. I'm not much more than a barmaid. Though I'd like to be more. I'd like to find a good man and live on a ranch. I'd like to have the family I never had. Rosie took me in when I was just a girl, gave me a place to live and a job. She was kind to me, good to me. But I would like to have a family of my own and a home of my own. I will not settle for a man I do not love.
I definitely owe you an apology. Will you accept my apology?
Sure.
The walk went much too quickly.
Here's the dining hall. Why not step inside and look at the arrangements?
Sam was stunned when he stepped through the door. Tables were set up covered with spotless white cloths. The chairs were polished wood. Shiny glasses and silverware were on the table. It was as nice as many of the dinner parties he had attended while attending the Eastern University. Leeds and Rosie were talking between themselves in the far corner of the room. Sam and Mary joined them.
Sam, glad you're here. What do you think?
It's amazing. How can you manage all this?
Rosie's a magician. I'm allowed a certain amount of funding for entertainment, and in my business, if you don't entertain visiting officers well, you might as well kiss off any chance for promotion. You learn some tricks, but this is all Rosie's doing.
Sam looked around again.
This is all quite impressive, but what's the hurry? You just got the telegram from Delgado this morning.
Trust me. Even starting now, Rosie will be busy up to the time of dinner itself.
Why go to all this trouble?
It's part of the job. Don't worry. You, Matt, and Josiah are all invited as well.
Matt looked over a large safe in a room near the office of Colonel Leeds. The safe was built into a wall that was reinforced with iron and heavy wood, though it was designed to blend in with the rest of the fort. It was better constructed than the adobe and wood bank buildings down the street that had been reduced to rubble by the attempted bank robbery.
The gold will go right in there. I suspect it'll take more than dumb luck to get into this safe, especially considering that Sam will be here to guard it.
And you will be watching Murdoch. You being there by yourself makes me nervous. You need at least some backup.
No, I want the element of surprise. There'll be a few soldiers posted around town, but if we have too many men kicking around, it'll muddy the waters and Whaley's gang will pass us right by. Trust me, my plan will work.
I still don't know. There's an awful lot of uncertainty about all this.
Hell, boy, life is uncertain. Sometimes you just take your chances. You know that better than me, some of the chances you've taken.
Well, that's different. Those chances are when I can depend on myself or on somebody I know I can depend on, like you and Sam. Those clowns in the old jail are a different matter. What if they don't figure out that the bars on the window are loose? Will we have to go in and help plan their escape for them? And what if they decide that it'd be better to stay clear of Whaley and his gang? Then where are we?
If that happens, we'll just come up with a different plan. But I have a feeling about those three. I think they'll take the bait. They're all small-time hoods wanting a crack at the big time. They know they could never do it on their own. If they ever had any doubts about that, you and Sam put them at rest when you captured them so easily after the failed bank robbery. No, their only chance is to join up with somebody much bigger than they are. Somebody like Dingo Whaley.
Finch stood on a chair to examine the only window in the room. It was a small opening that would let light in, but would not provide easy access from the outside.
And what if Whaley doesn't take the bait?
I've followed Dingo Whaley for a while now. I pretty much know how he thinks. He cannot let one of his men turn on him and live. And then there's the gold shipment coming in later in the week. When you mix together revenge on Murdoch and greed for the gold, Whaley will be here. And he'll be here within the week. You can count on it.
You seem very sure of yourself.
When you work with outlaws as long as I have, you develop a sixth sense about these things.
I don't plan to be that intimate with outlaws for that long.
You mean you don't plan to make the Texas Rangers your career? No, you and Sam are too young. Too much mischief in you yet. But you never know what life has in store for you.
How's the gold coming in? By special carrier?
Nope. It'll be on regular stage to keep from drawing attention. But it will be more heavily guarded than usual. All the passengers will be guards. There'll be soldiers stationed along the route. These are rather unusual precautions, but probably smart considering how many robberies there have been recently. An attempt might be made on the stage itself, but I think any try for the gold will come here, not on the road.
You've figured out all the angles, haven't you, Josiah?
Sam, that's what I'm paid to do.
Matt and Josiah were having lunch when a sudden disturbance outside caught their attention. Josiah looked outside.
A little excitement going on. Let's take a look.
Matt followed Finch into the street, where a Mexican official and a dozen soldiers were riding. They wore dress uniforms and shiny swords.
That's Raul Delgado.
Am I supposed to be impressed?
He'd think you should be.
Delgado continued to the office normally used by Colonel Leeds. This time, two civilians came out to greet him.
I am Delgado. Tell Colonel Leeds I am here for his meeting.
Excuse me, Commander. I am Peter Easton. This is my associate, Carl Holtz. We are representatives of the United States government and the ones who invited you to a meeting. You must have ridden very quickly to make such good time.
When important business is involved, time is of the essence.
So, Commander Delgado, you decided to meet with us after all.
Good afternoon to you as well, Colonel Leeds. There are many important issues to discuss. The time seemed right for a meeting, so here I am.
Some quarters will be made available to allow you to freshen up for tonight's dinner. We've arranged something special for you, after which we can discuss business.
I wouldn't miss this for the world.
Fisk continued to work on the crumbling adobe of the cell window. For the past 2 days, he had taken turns with the other two as they scraped and dug at the dirt, which originally had been hard as stone, but now was soft and yielding to their efforts. They had had to stop their work several times as a guard wandered in to check on them. Most of the day, however, they had been left alone. They had been hindered by a lack of tools, but Ben helped solve that problem by removing his belt buckle. It was sharp enough to dig into the material and crumble it enough to get a finger hold. The work was slow, but progress was being made. It was now nearly dark as the guard brought the evening meal.
Now they're having some damned party. Hey, guard, what's going on at the fort?
Some official from down south. They're throwing some kind of powwow for him. Why? You're looking for an invitation or something.
Maybe we are at that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, all the big guys in town will be there. The colonel, his officers, the bank president, the mayor, the federal guys, even the Texas Rangers. Oh, I'm sure you all would just fit right in.
Hey, would you ask him to keep it down? We'll be trying to sleep in here tonight.
Sure, then I'll do it.
Well, are you crazy or something?
Nah. You saw how funny that guard thought the idea of us getting out was. They'll never expect us to get out tonight. And if the soldiers are up at the party, there'll be fewer left to come after us.
Ben moved back to the window and started working again.
I think we're just about deep enough. Yeah, I thought I could feel the bars give a little. Come on over and help me.
The three men grabbed hold of the bar on the left and started to twist. Even with the old adobe, the bars were still fairly solid and refused to budge at first. With all three men straining, the first bar moved slightly.
Come on! That's it!
This gave them new energy. Ben dug into the adobe as Tom and Fisk continued to twist and strain at the bar.
One down.
By now, it was entirely dark. There was no sound from the adjoining room. The prisoners figured that the guard was probably sleeping, but still tried to work quietly. The second bar came out a little easier, and the final ones easier still. The men placed them quietly on the floor.
I'm out of here. I've had all I ever want of jails.
We'll need to find some horses. If the soldiers are all at the party, we should be able to find a few left unguarded. Maybe even a few guns. Then, we're on our way to Mexico.
You two do what you want, but I have my personal business to attend to.
You still think you could take out Sam Two Wolves? Go ahead and try. He'll skin you alive. And it couldn't happen to a nicer person. I only wish I could stick around to see it.
That's your business, and I could care less. If we hadn't listened to you in the first place, we wouldn't be here now. I'm going to find Whaley.
You'll see. I'll take out two wolves and still be in Mexico before you two. Then we'll see who has the last laugh.
Tom and Ben slipped into the night toward the stable, figuring there would be some horses there that they could steal. Fisk moved toward the fort. It took some doing, but Matt and Sam were able to find new suits at the only store in town and have a local seamstress fit them before the dinner party started. It took even more doing to convince Josiah Finch to accept a new suit as a gift and to actually wear it.
Consider it another sacrifice for your state and your country, Josiah.
Hell, I'd rather be out chasing Indians and outlaws.
It's an honor to be invited to such a diplomatic dinner.
I think I'd rather be at my own scalping.
But the Texas Ranger had put on the new suit and joined Matt, Sam, and Leeds at the function. Sam had an idea what to expect since he had seen a preview. Matt, however, was taken completely by surprise when they walked in and saw the dazzling display. Leeds stepped up to them, all decked out in his dress uniform.
I can hardly believe it. Colonel, how are you able to manage this?
I give credit to Rosie. I don't know what I'd do without her. I'd put her up there with all those Washington women any day of the week. In fact, I'm going to pop the question probably later tonight, after all this is over.
Well, good luck. You have my blessing, or my sympathy, whichever is most appropriate.
Thank you, Josiah.
He looked around the room, which was by now filled with people.
Still don't understand why all the fuss. You're treating this guy like he's actually somebody important.
You and I know what Delgado really is. Unfortunately, he is also the ranking officer in the territory that adjoins ours. And this is politics, whether we like it or not.
Where is the SOB?
Diplomacy, Josiah.
Right. Where is the distinguished and honorable SOB?
He'll make a late entrance, just to show how important he is. He should be here soon.
Barney Cooper, the bank president, and two others walked up to the group. He shook Matt's hand, then Sam's.
This is Alex Granger and Dennis Johnson, two of the larger stockholders in the Bank Association. We just wanted to personally thank you for your excellent work the other night. Thanks to you, virtually all the money was recovered. If not for you Rangers, they might have gotten completely away.
It was nothing.
Just doing our duty.
We are all safer with you men here. Hope you all stay with it for a long time. We all need you.
As the group blended in with the growing crowd, Matt turned to Finch.
How much did you pay him to tell us that?
Didn't have to pay him a thing. Thanks like that are one of the fringe benefits of the job. The bad thing is that if you mess up, the same man would probably be in charge of the grievance committee looking to file a complaint against you. It's all part of the job.
And in the end, the pay's the same?
Son, if you do this kind of work for the pay, you're just plain crazy. Of course, you're probably crazy if you do this kind of work for any reason.
Excuse me, will you? As the man of the hour, I need to go and do my job.
Delgado entered the room with Carl Holtz and Peter Easton. They took the head table and were joined by Leeds. Some of Delgado's men came up the rear. They remained standing. Leeds motioned to the Rangers to join them as well.
Guess this is your lucky day, Josiah.
You mean I gotta eat with those yahoos as well? I don't know how I let you boys talk me into this.
Ben and Tom had no problem finding horses. The stable was deserted, and the two had their pick of horses and gear. They didn't bother to be choosy, but grabbed the first saddles they found and tossed them on the backs of the first horses they came to. In minutes, they were out the back door and on their way south. They were pleased that nobody had seen them or tried to stop them. They hoped that by the time the jailbreak was discovered, they would be almost to Mexico. Fisk was not in such a hurry, since he was more concerned about the party. He made a circle around the stable, watched his fellow ex-prisoners ride into the night toward the south. He had no plan except for his hatred of Sam Two Wolves. He would find some way to get even for humiliating him. His path took him past Rosie's cantina, which was now locked and dark. Fisk stopped, looked through the window into the dark interior, and saw the bottles lined up behind the bar. He went around the back and kicked open the door. He waited for several seconds and entered when nobody confronted him. He grabbed the first bottle he found, took a long drink, and felt it burn all the way down. He found a smaller bottle, put it in his pocket, and started looking around. Fisk located a gun and holster in the small area at the back of the cantina that Rosie used as an office. Fisk guessed that it had been used as payment by some out-of-work cowboy, or perhaps it was even left behind from the shootout that had taken place previously. It didn't really matter, since it was a weapon and it would be enough to take care of Sam Two Wolves. He suddenly felt a lot better. His doubts started to vanish. Now he had to find Two Wolves, who would be at the party. Fisk snatched another bottle as he left the cantina and worked his way toward the fort, keeping to the shadows. He fingered his gun, took another drink, reached a window, and looked inside. The men inside were seated at fancy tables, eating fancy food, and Sam Two Wolves was at the head table, as if he were somebody important. How important would he be with a bullet through his heart? The outlaw pulled his gun, aimed through the window, but paused as first one official and then another blocked a clear shot at Two Wolves. Fisk stayed back in the shadows, waiting for the right moment. Leeds finished introducing everybody around the table as Mary and some of Rosie's other girls started to serve the food. They wore spotless, freshly pressed uniforms. Matt was amazed at the magic Rosie had cast over the meal as well. Fresh beef, fresh vegetables, cold wine. Delgado was charming as he ate, polite to everybody, including Finch and Leeds.
He's slick, Matt. Don't let it fool you.
It doesn't, Colonel. I can recognize Bull no matter how slick the package.
The evening continued. Before long, it was Delgado's turn to make a speech.
It is with great pleasure that I greet my friends to the north. Our intent is to further beneficial relations between the countries through mutual respect and cooperation. In that, I seek your help, respect, and cooperation.
He is good.
Delgado bowed and returned to his seat. As Rosie's girls started to serve dessert, Leeds leaned over the table.
Those were pretty words, Delgado. Maybe it's time now to get down to business. Just what are you doing up here?
Colonel, now is not the time.
No, Mr. Holtz. We can start our discussions now, if you wish. You know the problem. You Americans have no respect for the border. You treat my country as if it were your private lands. That must stop. And it must stop immediately.
Delgado, we both know you violate the border as much or more than we do. The difference is that we go down to arrest those that have committed crimes in our country. Your people come up here to commit crimes.
How dare you make such accusations, Colonel? Mr. Easton, is this any way to treat a guest in your country? I thought we were here to solve problems.
Leeds, that's enough.
The idea is to discuss all sides of the issue, not to whitewash it.
We have been very patient. But since you gentlemen speak plainly, so will I. From now on, if Americans set foot on Mexican soil without permission, for any reason, we will arrest them. It is as simple as that.
You can't be serious. You give us no room to negotiate.
Delgado looked straight at Josiah Finch.
We are not joking.
If the Ranger started to retort, the words never got out of his mouth. A window in the back of the dining room exploded. Glass showered the tables as the slug hit the wall behind Sam's head. People dove under the tables. Delgado's men pulled their guns and were ready to return fire.
Enough!
Sam knew the bullet must have been intended for him since he heard it whistle past his ear. He pulled his own gun and ran across the floor, leaping through the window in an attempt to confront the attacker. Sam rolled to his feet and started looking around carefully. A second shot came from behind a tree. There were still too many people around to get in a full-fledged gunfight, so Sam did not shoot back. Instead, he circled around so that if he drew fire, it would be away from the building. Who could be shooting at him? And why just him? Sam dropped to the ground.
Damn! This is a new suit, too.
Fisk quickly retreated. He didn't want to face the full fury that Sam could unleash. Fisk was suddenly not so sure of himself. He realized now that he should have thought his plan through in more detail. He had failed to kill Sam. He had no horse on which to escape. He had no plan. With a panicky feeling, the thought hit him that he might not even make it out of this alive. He should have joined the other two for Mexico. Now it was too late. He had no choice but to see this through to the end. Sam had slipped into the shadows, looking in every bush and behind every tree for his attacker. In minutes, the others would be out here as well. Sam, however, did not want any help on this one. He took a dim view of people trying to kill him. He wanted to deal with his assailant on his own.
Who are you? Why do you want to kill me?
Sam Two Wolves. You've humiliated me. You've accused me. Now, it's time for you to die.
Fisk, that you? So you managed to escape, have you? You would have been better off staying in your jail cell. What about the other two? Are they out too? Are they with you?
Why don't you go and find out for yourself?
Sam figured Fisk was alone, since he had heard only the one voice and the one gun being fired. Perhaps the other two were on their way to Mexico, as Finch had predicted. That Fisk had stayed behind was a development that Finch had not predicted. But then, no plan was perfect.
You can't win, Fisk. In a few seconds, there'll be more men hunting for you than you could imagine. You'll be shot to ribbons. Give yourself up. Again. And you might live.
Not before I kill you.
Sam saw the glint of light on metal and hit the ground. Sam shot, but the bullet hit a tree.
Tell you what, Fisk. I'll make it a little fairer for you. Come out in the open, and I'll holster my gun. I'll even let you draw first. Or, you don't even have to draw if you want. Just give me to the count of three.
Several figures appeared from the building.
Nobody shoot. I'm giving this fellow a chance to fight me fair and square. He's thinking about it.
What is he, a coward?
Come on out and fight like a man.
Fisk knew he was trapped. There was no chance for escape. He could be killed by the bullets of a dozen men all out for blood, or he could go out like a man in a fair fight with Sam Two Wolves.
You got a deal. I'm coming out. Then we'll see who's a better man.
Sam slowly placed his revolver back in its holster and waited for Fisk to show himself. Fisk was strangely calm as he stepped into the open area illuminated by the light from inside the dining hall. He returned his gun to its holster and stood with his hand outstretched. He realized that a crowd was watching. It was perhaps the biggest crowd that had ever watched him do anything. If he was to die, at least he would not be a coward. Sam stood comfortably in the shadows, waiting for Fisk to make his move.
You can still back out.
Nah, I still plan to kill you, or I'll die trying.
His hand dropped to the gun. He had it almost out of the holster. The slug hit Fisk in his sore arm. The outlaw still managed to hold on to the gun and finish pulling it from the holster. He lifted and shot again. Sam also shot a second time. Flaming death belched from the gun barrel. That bullet hit Fisk directly in the heart, sending a geyser of blood streaming from the outlaw's chest. Fisk took a step forward and fell to the ground, still holding the gun in his hand. He lay still. Sam walked over to the body and examined it briefly. By the door, a group of men were talking. As Sam got closer, he noted that Delgado was addressing Holtz and Easton. Some of the Mexican soldiers were retrieving their horses.
You all know what this means. I have been willing to negotiate in good faith, since my main concern is peace and harmony with my northern neighbors. But this changes everything.
In what way? There was no attack made on your life. It was Sam Two Wolves this outlaw was after.
No matter. The way I look at it, if you have such lawlessness in your own country that you cannot control it, why should you be allowed in my country? No, gentlemen. We will take care of our problems in our own way.
You are being unreasonable.
And if you allow any of your American so-called law enforcement officers across the border, it will be an international incident, one which your superiors in Washington will hear about. Be warned. It was an excellent meal, Colonel. My compliments to the cook. Yeah.
Ben and Tom got away from San Angelo without any problem. Nobody tried to stop or chase them. Along the way, nobody recognized them or threatened them. After several hours, the two started to relax. The horses waded across the Rio Grande without incident. They followed the main trail and stopped at a cantina. They had only a little money between them, but it was enough for a few beers and some beans.
This was easier than I expected. That was the best jail I've ever been in, or at least the easiest to get out of. Wonder if Fisk had luck as good as ours.
Who cares, Tom? I'm more concerned about us. I mean, we're here, but now what? We're wanted back in the States. We're down to our last dollar, and we have no idea where to find Dingo Whaley.
You really haven't been around that much, have you? A man like Whaley might be able to hide from the law, but word gets out. If you know who to ask.
He's not exactly going to hang up a sign advertising his hideout.
No, but he has money, and he spends it. He's involved in various jobs those in the know will hear about. Give me an hour, and I bet I can narrow the search down. Maybe even find out where he's holed up.
Ben reached into his pocket.
After I pay for this meal, I'll have a dollar left. You can find Whaley by this afternoon. I'll give you this dollar.
It's a deal. Be ready to part with your money.
Tom sauntered out of the cantina and out back, as if to relieve himself. When he saw he was alone, he pulled off his boot and slipped his fingers through a slit in the lining, pulling out a small wad of bills. This stash was a secret he shared with nobody. He had learned from experience that ultimately no one was trustworthy, and that a little backup cash was indispensable. He counted out $100. It wasn't much, but it would be enough to put him in the position to find out what he needed to know. This town wasn't much. A few adobe houses, cantinas, stables. It didn't take Tom long to find what he was looking for behind one of the stables. Several men, Mexican and American, were crouched down in the dirt shooting craps. Tom knew that in every town there was at least one continuous game going on, and the players would be the kind of men he could deal with on equal terms. He also knelt and threw down some money. He didn't have to say a word as the dice were passed to him. The stakes were not high. He won a little, lost a little more, and the players opened up to him.
You just passing through?
Maybe. Depends on what I find. I've heard things.
Vamos, vamos. Necesito un siete, siete.
Nine. Y'all hear things?
Yeah, but what I've heard could be of particular interest to a certain person.
Talk straight.
I've got information for Dingo Whaley about one of his men, Mel Murdoch.
Roll the dice.
Come on, baby, come to Papa. Come on, baby, come on, come to my Papa. Oh, shit.
Hey, Whaley and his gang have been hanging around San Jacinto, where the Mex Army has an outpost. It's not that far from here, if you really want to look him up.
Why wouldn't I?
Haven't you heard about Whaley? He's a mean SOB. He just about beat a poor bartender to death for not bringing a beer fast enough. Not somebody I'd want to cross paths with for any reason.
Well, he'll want to know what I have to tell him.
Maybe. Still wouldn't take the chance of getting killed. But it's your skin.
Tom handed him the dice.
Believe it's your turn to roll.
You ain't no lawman. I knew that before you even hunkered down to play. But to show you how slick Whaley is, he's even got the local military to keep their hands off him.
He's got a sweet deal, but I wouldn't want any part of it.
Thanks for the advice. I'll keep it in mind.